From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Eric Burke is director of the Eugene Springfield Office of Friends of Trees. Eric is a certified arborist and landscape professional and a Eugene Springfield native. Thank you so much, Eric, for being here on Oregon Grapevine and shedding some light on trees and more. I thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot for having me on, Barbara.
Around town and around the area, I see trees, and they have little cards on them that say they were planted by Friends of the Trees or planted by Eugene City, and they're interesting, and I don't really know what they are, but I wonder about the median strip and those trees and how they get there, and where does that decision start and go? How does that work?
Well, there's a lot to that. That's a good question, and I think I would start by saying about a quarter of most cities, 15 to 30%, is public land, and about 75% or three quarters of the city is private. And so the signs that you're seeing are for trees planted in the public right of way. So a part of our city that's managed by City of Eugene and City of Springfield for the most part. And so City of Eugene has an internal planting program where some of those tags you've been seeing are City of Eugene trees, and they've done some amazing planting in the downtown area and all around Eugene in the last year especially. That's been really nice to see. And then Friends of Trees and contractors and individuals also plant in that public right-of-way. And so we leave tags that thank our business sponsors and have the species name of the tree and identify that it's us that have been working there.
How does the jurisdiction work? If I have a house and I have my yard is my yard, and then there's a sidewalk, and then there's the median strip, am I responsible for that median strip? Do I get to plant what I want, or do I have to talk to the powers that be?
It varies by every city, and here in Eugene and Springfield, we kind of follow an old Western tradition of having a public right-of-way where there's a cultural tradition, at least, of the adjoining property owner maintaining or the city maintaining or some combination of both. But the city does own and manage that right-of-way. And that right-of-way typically extends from the curb somewhere between 5 and 20 feet in. And so there's whole chunks of Eugene and Springfield, in Eugene, particularly in River Road and Santa Clara and parts of Bethel, but really in all neighborhoods that have undeveloped right-of-ways where there isn't a planting strip, that area between the sidewalk and the curb. Where there is a planting strip, it makes it simpler because that's an area you know is a public right-of-way. And I'll describe how planting works there. In the undeveloped right-of-ways, you kind of have to identify what the right-of-way is to know which part is the public part and which part is the private part. And sometimes we have to tell people that the public part comes almost up to their house. And they didn't know that. But in that public part, cities typically, the city of Eugene assumes responsibility for the trees there historically. But my interpretation of the way code is written is that the adjoining landowner is responsible for maintaining that. I think it's similar in Springfield. In some cities, the city itself takes total responsibility in those areas, and in other cities, I believe Portland's more like this. It's almost entirely on the landowner to maintain the public right-of-way trees. So there's this tradition of the city requiring a public space along streets and houses that the adjoining property owner manages. And so it is regulated. I don't know all the regulations. I mostly know the ones related to trees, but people can plant shrubs and flowers and things like that, and there are regulations that govern how that shakes out. For us, we work in primarily our planting program, and our funding comes to plant in the public right-of-way. And so we follow the city's approved street tree list, the siting guidelines, and work really carefully around utilities like water meters or fire hydrants or overhead power lines to make sure that our goal is to put trees in places where they can live long lives and thrive. Unfortunately, a very large percentage of trees that end up in cities are in places where they won't be able to thrive because it's a big tree under a power line, or it's a tree planted in too close to some other kind of utility, or too close to hardscape, or too big for its site. And so we're really trying to head off those kind of issues with thoughtful planning and planting.
That leads to the question of native versus not. Certainly there have been conversations I have heard about people being really upset because non-native species of various kinds, whether it's animals, whether it's trees, whether it's flowers, are introduced. Why do we do that? How dare they, etc.? But there are reasons for that. And I'm guessing, I know not a lot about trees, but looking at the trees that I see planted, I doubt many of them are native. So what is that conversation?
That's a really important question. I'm glad you brought that up. Obviously, the primary invasive species and the most harmful invasive species are humans. When I walked out my door this morning, there were 13 turkeys milling around. And so there's another species that we've brought in that is thriving here now. With trees in cities, I think native plants are very, very important. And it's a really important focus for us at Friends of Trees and here in Springfield and Eugene. Some of the benefits of native plants are that they're adapted to our climate and soils, so they tend to do well here. And they tend to do well without adding harmful inputs of water and agricultural chemicals like pesticides or fertilizers. So that's a huge advantage. The advantage that I get really excited about with native plants and trees is the benefits for habitat, so for non-human life, particularly like insects, pollinators. Our native bumblebees are particularly threatened and benefit from not so much the trees as much as the understory things that we plant under the trees. For instance, I'm looking out our office window at a native aster, Douglas's aster, that's in full bloom, and I can see bumblebees coming to it, and that really helps them. We've driven many, many native bumblebee species extinct locally, and so they really need our help. The problem with planting a lot of native trees, in particular in our cities, is that the thing that controls how big a tree you can plant in a planting strip, and here I'm talking about street trees, the ones that most of our work is focused on street trees, but we're increasingly planting yard trees, which I'll talk about later. But for street trees, there's just not quite enough room in most of our planting strips for most of our native trees. And so most of Oregon's native trees that do well in cities are large trees. So they need an enormous amount of root volume for them to thrive. So, for example, almost all our conifers get very large, and we are not allowed to plant them unless we have a 10-foot or 9-foot wide planting strip or greater in most cases. And the average planting strip in Eugene is 5.5 feet. In Portland, most of our Friends of Trees planting is in three to five foot wide planting strips. Here in Eugene, we're lucky in that we have slightly larger planting strips. Springfield has a lot of 2.5 to 5 foot planting strips. And here we're not allowed to plant in under a 4 foot wide planting strip. So a lot of our planting, we plant in 4 to 5.5 or 6 foot wide planting strips. We plant small trees, 5.5 to 8. We plant medium sized trees, and we don't typically start planting large trees, which most Oregon natives are, until we have an 8 foot wide planting strip or greater, which is relatively uncommon. So just by the way we've organized our city and laid out our areas for trees, we don't have the ability to plant as many natives as we would like. We offer a selection of native trees for private yards, and when we do plantings in alongside roadways and stuff, we typically plant native trees, native shrubs, and native understory plants like camas, milkweed, or Douglas's aster that are particularly good for pollinators and habitat. One more point on that, our small trees, our small native trees that we do plant is primarily vine maple. Our small to medium native dogwood is very badly afflicted by anthracnose, a fungal foliar disease here, as well as many of our trees are native to the Cascades or the Coast Range, but not to the hot valley floor. So our native dogwood technically isn't native here in Eugene or Springfield, just as Western Red Cedar would be similar to that. Other small trees that we can't really plant is Douglas's hawthorn, our native hawthorn, because it's prohibited by some cities. Portland allows it, but Eugene and Springfield don't because of its thorns. And then cascara, a small to medium-sized tree, tends to like more humusy soils with partial shade. In our experience, we have not seen it thrive very much in Eugene, unfortunately. So the native trees that we love to plant and we plant regularly are Oregon white oak, Valley ponderosa pine, incense cedar, big leaf maple, and California black oak, Oregon myrtle, Canyon live oak, and many others. And we plant them as much as we can. The other limitation on planting natives is that Friends of Trees uses a consumer choice model where we offer people a selection of trees that, if the area is big enough, we offer a selection of native trees, and we also offer conventional shade trees or trees that are on the city's approved street tree list, and that's what most people want and select. In our experience, most people want dogwoods and maples, and that's what they, or things like black tupelo, or other trees that are marketed really heavily by trade associations. And so that's what people tend to want.
You mentioned yard planting. And if you could talk briefly about what that program is or how that works. So you don't just do median strips. You also do something else. So why don't you give me kind of a short example of what that is?
And to do that, I'd like to mention our two programs, our two primary programs, our Green Space program, our GS program, and that program plants in parks, open spaces, natural areas, roadsides. It's very different up in Portland. We plant in Portland and Vancouver, Washington, and 10 or 15 of the cities in the metro area there. And from about Oregon City north, just across the Columbia, much of the area before Euro-American settlement was Doug fir and Western Red Cedar forest in that area. So restoration often involves planting trees. Here, because of indigenous management, fire management, there were very few trees south of Oregon City in the Willamette Valley. Most of them were They would try coming back, but they'd be burned in annual fires that the indigenous people did in, as part of their fantastic management, ecological management of the Willamette Valley. So restoration here often involves cutting out trees or logging for the groups that do that kind of thing, or planting oak savanna-y type trees. And so in our green space program, we are focused more on widely spaced oak savanna-oriented kinds of plantings, and we also plant trees that we consider climate resilient but are not natives mixed in with our natives, so things like giant sequoia and some of the native California oaks like valley oak and blue oak and gray pine, some of the trees that grow in areas where our climate is supposed to be like in the near future. In our green space program, which you can see around Eugene and Springfield, mostly in vacant fields along Beltline or Northwest Expressway or I-105, 126, you can see several of our projects. So those areas are all planted by groups of volunteers at events. And then our main program is our neighborhood trees program, and that program plants street and yard trees. All the cities that we work in, the 20 different cities that we work in around Oregon and Washington, all fund yard tree planting except Eugene and Springfield at this time. So that's a program we hope to grow. We see a lot of the future of urban forestry being on the private side because it's the vast majority of our city, and it's where the best sites for trees to grow and thrive, the kind of big trees that help us with heating and climate change, the best sites are on the private side. So to answer your question, sorry to take a little bit to set the stage there, to answer your question, the way our neighborhood trees program works is people can sign up on our website, friendsoftrees.org, create an account, and if it's and then they can sign up for street and or yard trees. If street trees are signed up for, we have to do an inspection following all the city's rules for distances from alleys and driveways and water meters and street signs and street lights and intersections and stop signs. And so we lay out where trees can go following all city rules and put a paint mark on the curb face at those proposed locations. We measure the width of the planting strip and whether or not there's overhead power lines. And then we give a selection of trees to folks, and we have funding to allow for highly discounted trees. So the yard tree program, we don't have the funding to do inspections for at this time, but we offer up to 4 trees per yard, and there our focus is on native trees and fruit trees and large shade trees that we can get locally or inexpensively. So those are the options that we offer for yard trees. And for those, we ask folks to put a stake in the ground where they want each particular tree to go. And a team of volunteers arrives on our planting days and plants the trees in those locations. In both street and yard trees, the homeowner needs to water the trees to establishment, which is really the biggest responsibility of getting a tree. This year, thanks to some funding we receive, we'll be able to offer scholarships for 50 or 100% off to folks living in neighborhoods that were really working hard to get tree canopy in, traditionally, historically underserved neighborhoods in Eugene and Springfield.
I want to go to that issue, the issue of a map that I recently saw, and I know conversations around places that are more economically rich and people who have more money and can live in those areas tend to have more trees. Places that's not the case tend to have not as many trees. So how does that impact? There are political ramifications to that, and I'm hoping you can answer kind of why is that a problem?
Well, it's a it's a problem for a lot of reasons. It's a really complex question. It's a great question. And Friends of Trees has a really strong equity focus to our work. Super important to us to try and get trees out, particularly to the people who will get the most benefits from them. And trees provide an enormous amount of public health benefits in addition to their ecological and habitat benefits and climate benefits and cooling, cleaning air and water, all those kind of things. But they also, living in a well-treed area helps us stay calmer and lowers our blood pressure, can actually lead to healthier birth weights. It has an amazing amount of different positive benefits. One of the biggest ones is helping to clean particulates out of the air. And so we really want to have as many trees as possible. Children tend to be able to focus more and do better in school if they come to a school that has trees and in a neighborhood that has trees. There's just so many different benefits about trees. The classic photo from space that is an example of this is Baltimore, where you can see wealthy neighborhoods that have very high canopy cover and well-treed, and poor neighborhoods that have very few trees. And it's a problem across America. Portland was recently listed as having a particularly inequitable urban forest. One of the maps that's currently being looked at a lot right now is American Forest Tree Equity Map or application. And it's very useful to look at for Eugene and to see differences. It plugs in many different variables. And what's really helpful is that it looks at it by census block. In the past, we've done a lot of looking at things by city or by neighborhood, which is kind of too big an area to really get a feel for it. So in Eugene, for example, in Bethel neighborhood, which is a very large neighborhood in West Eugene, some parts of the neighborhood have very low racial diversity, high income, and medium canopy. Other parts are highly racially diverse, have very low income and very low canopy. And by getting down to the census block level, you can identify parts of these neighborhoods that we want to work in more and provide more opportunities to have healthy trees and a canopy of shade and understory plants too, and food, fruit, and nut trees also that provide a lot of benefits. So we're trying to use those kind of tools. The EPA has a great mapping tool. The City of Eugene will be letting us use a tool called Tree Plotter that they're getting that provides the ability to look for these areas that don't have as many trees and are underserved to try and do more work in. In Eugene and in smaller cities, the patterns are often different than the stereotypical patterns in larger cities. For example, we have very high canopy in the hill areas of both Eugene and Springfield. So the South Hills of Eugene have 50 to 80% canopy cover. And you can just look out and see the Doug firs, that forests, the hillsides in the South Hills. Those areas tend to be higher income areas and low diversity areas. So that's fitting the pattern. In Springfield, the Thurston Hills in southeast Springfield also fit that pattern. In West Eugene, the canopy levels are as low as 5 to 10% in Bethel neighborhood, Train Song neighborhood, and parts of Industrial Corridor and West Eugene industrial neighborhoods. And so those areas have much lower canopy cover, and parts of them have particularly low canopy cover combined with low income. And so those examples really fit the pattern. Where it doesn't sometimes is in low-income areas that have a lot of undeveloped right-of-ways or big yards and stuff. In those areas, native trees in some areas are coming in and providing kind of volunteer canopy cover, partly because of the lack of hiring landscapers. And in some wealthy neighborhoods, particularly in North Eugene, you can see examples of low canopy from excessive landscape work where the landscape's being covered with very small ornamental trees and bark mulch. And so you have very low canopy cover in wealthy areas. So overall, the pattern is there, and we're trying to use applications to make a difference and serve the areas that really need it. But there's also some diversity in the pattern itself.
Did you grow up climbing trees, loving trees, hanging out with trees? How did you come to this?
I grew up in Eugene, walking around on foot and on bike for most of my life, so also in Springfield. So I lived all over. We moved all the time, so I went to most of the schools in Eugene and Springfield, most of the elementary schools, and lived in a lot of different neighborhoods. But I didn't even really learn about trees or much about nature until I was about 10 and started going out more and more. And I had a stepfather who was an outdoors person, and so that was wonderful for getting me around Oregon and kind of falling in love with Oregon's nature.
As we wrap up here, are there maybe a couple of things that if you could wave your magic tree wand, and huge question, I realize, but kind of wave your wand and go, okay, these are the things I would really like to see implemented and improved in the next 10 years?
Well, if I had a magic wand, a lot of things would change, because sadly, we're kind of at the end point of industrial consumer society, where we've organized our city with our primary focus on having a consumer society that drives everywhere and is powered by huge amounts of energy. So our focus is really on driving cars, roads, buildings, utilities, and hardscapes. And trees have to fit within that landscape. And I'm looking out on a full block of asphalt as we speak, with some trees in the background. And we were able to get permission to plant two trees in this block of asphalt. But I would love to see us begin to really seriously start to remove some of the hardscape in our cities that causes them to be much hotter than they need to be, and to make room for trees, really long-term room from a design standpoint. Right now, the places in the public right-of-ways where we plant trees have been just severely compacted by development, utility installation, and many other things, and they're not big enough for the kind of trees we need to really provide the shade and the ecological services that we hope for trees. So I would make us change the way we organize, develop, and build our cities to allow very significant room for gardening and for trees and ecological habitats, and start to de-emphasize the hardscapes to the extent that we can. And a big part of that would be organizing more around walking, biking, and mass transit. That would be one of the things that would make the biggest differences for trees. Another magic wand thing would be to bury all power lines. If all power lines were buried, almost half of the public right-of-ways in our cities could have large shade trees, large canopy trees, instead of the small ornamental trees that provide very little ecological services that we need to plant under our power lines. But I could go on for a very long time about changes, but maybe I should stop there with those two.
Thank you very much for your time, Eric Burke. I appreciate it. Learned a lot, and maybe we can continue this conversation down the road.
Sounds great, Barbara. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh, pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.